All right, so A, you're asking that you read this week's Jewish Times, and you're not sure you fully understand when we say something is not meant to be taken literally and when it is. I mean, your question is, what are the rules to determine? Rabbi Israel Chaim said that we, in the Chumash, in the Torah, so we take everything literally, unless it's impossible to take it literally. Because if you can't leave it up to a haphazard or a non-guided approach, and just whenever the feeling moves you to say, I'm going to give a metaphorical explanation. It has to be warranted, meaning that it's impossible to explain otherwise. Like, for example, with Jacob wrestling with a man. So the beginning of that verse, it says that he was left alone. And then the end of the verse, it says he wrestled with a man. So then it's impossible that both are true. Either Jacob was alone or not. So there it's impossible to say that he's alone and not alone at the same time. So if the Torah tells you he's alone and then he wrestles with a man, so then the man has to be interpreted. Because you can't, it would be easy to interpret that to say that, well, we'll interpret what it means to be alone. No, it means he was left alone on that side of the river. So that means when he was wrestling with the man, so the man could then be part of his personality. But it's warranted, and it's actually demanded to give an explanation. It's not literal because of that. The case like Bilam, what we're going to discuss. So the donkey starts talking to him, and he talks back like nothing's happening. I mean, the person does not have that normal response if an animal starts to talk to you. Okay, but in cases, for example, where you have a snake in the Garden of Eden, so then it's not impossible to have a beast speak like man speaks, all right? But that was a one-time event. That's why I say about the donkey, so you know, donkeys do not talk. So we already know that. That's why that does not make sense to be a literal. Okay. So, all right, for example, let me just read what you wrote so far. You said, for example, how do we know that Jacob and his fight with the Malach was not to be taken literally? Okay. And Shoshana, you're writing, I was going to ask also, since Aja said that, for you to be able to explain to people the difference between rationalism and allegories to literalism. I had to teach this last week and thought it would be good to explain. So what about Yetzias Mitzrayim? Yeah, you have a historical event that the Jews lived in Egypt and they left. There's nothing impossible about that story. So there's no, you don't have the right to say that the words are metaphor. And the snake in the Garden of Eden, so you have an argument amongst the rabbis, but it's not impossible to have a talking snake. God can make, just like he made the man talk, so he can create other beings that have speech. That's not an impossibility. But what's an impossibility is something which is self-contradictory. To say that Jacob was he was left alone and he was also with a man at the same time, that's a contradiction. Right? And the truth is, you know, 99.9% of the Torah is literal. There's few cases where we resort to metaphor, and then we'll get into that as to why. What is the reason in these cases? Okay, and let me just see if Josh and Yisrael get the sound now that we got back online. So, Josh and Yisrael, if you could just type audio okay, let me know that you can hear the audio all right. Should be fine now. Yeah, but the rules are not simple. And there's also another problem. If you use the license and you say, well, I'll just interpret the snake as metaphorical, so then maybe God is also a metaphor. And then what you're doing is you're destroying the Torah at that point. Okay, so that's what I was saying. It's a good question. Let's clarify it. Why is it that it's possible for the snake to talk, but it's not possible for the donkey to talk? So what I'm saying is that in the Garden of Eden, so we had species at the beginning of their creation. So this is where we can determine whether or not these species have speech or not. So man has speech, and we can say a snake does also. But nothing else had speech. So now, thousands of years later, when nobody has ever witnessed any other animal speaking, all of a sudden the donkey of Bilam starts to speak. Now we're saying that that has to be taken metaphorically. It's not impossible for God to make a donkey talk. Don't take me wrong. God can make a miracle. But this was not the way of that species at that point in history. So since it was not that way, so we say that it's more sensible to interpret it as metaphoric. And also, you have Maimonides, who says that whenever you have a story in the Torah, and in the story it mentions an angel, so then Maimonides says that you could know of certainty that the entire story from beginning to end is a vision or something taking place not on earth. So that means it's either in man's mind or it's on earth. There's only two possibilities. All right? I mean, there is God's, the sphere, we should call it, of the angels, which means the laws, natural laws that govern the physical laws. That's not something that's on the earth. It doesn't have a location. A law is not something, a principle, a law of nature doesn't have a location. It's a reality, but it controls nature. That's what you have a pasuk in the Torah that it says by Egypt when the Jews left. So it says that when they were by the sea and the Egyptians were now about to attack the Jews as they were going to enter the Red Sea, so it said God moved the malach from in front of the Jews to the back of the Jews. And then in the same pasuk, in the same verse, it says that he moved the pillar of cloud from the front of the Jews to the back of the Jews. What's the repetition for? So if you think about it, so the repetition is because the first thing God is talking about, you know, let me just make sure that Josh and Yisrael are hearing this. Okay, yes, Ro, good. Okay. So let me just get to that point. So the point is that there is the malach that God moved, meaning the angel that he moved from the front of the camp of the Jews to the back, meaning to make a wall between the Jews and Egyptians so they shouldn't be able to attack. But then it says he moved the cloud from the front of the Jews to the back. So what God is telling you is that the way that it works is that God controls an angel. He tells an angel what to do, meaning the thing which controls the forces of nature. And then the angel itself, which is appointed over a certain area, like for a cloud or a fire, that angel then basically controls it. That's how God operates the world. He has certain designated forces or laws that govern the world. And each one, like the rabbis say, one malach, one angel doesn't do two missions. That's because an angel is something which governs a certain law of nature. So there's only certain properties that it has under its control. That's what it means that one angel doesn't do two missions. Fire doesn't make wet. Fire can only burn or heat or illuminate. Okay? All right, so that's just I just want to show you a point that there is a sphere of existence which is not on earth. But we're not getting into that. That's not what we're here to do today. We're talking about metaphor. We're talking about how to determine when and where we can apply it. And you see, even the great rabbis had disputes about it. But you have to have a rational approach to when we say it. And what you'll see is that as we go through the story, that there is warrant, and there's also clues that the rabbis give. When you put it all together, so then you make your statement, you make your assessment. Is this story a metaphor or not? And why do I need a metaphor over here? What is the demand for the metaphor? And what's the message that God deems so important? So why don't we do this? Why don't we take the story, and we'll point out the things which seem to be interesting, and then I'll give it over to you, and you'll suggest your ideas on it. Okay? So let's start. So the story, as we read it yesterday, so the Balak was the king of Moab. He was under the impression that Bilam had the abilities to curse, when in fact he didn't. A person's mouth has no control. You can't say something that has any effects on the laws of nature. So the reason why he felt this way, as Rabbi Chait explained, is that he was very smart. He had very sharp political acumen. He was able to detect when a person was on his way up in success or when a person was doomed for failure. And what Bilam would do, and this is what one of the rabbis, I believe the Ibn Ezra, says also, is that he would, before the person was about to be successful, Bilam would pronounce a blessing, and then people looked at it, and ostensibly it seemed that Bilam caused this person's success, because they saw Bilam bless the person, and then the person became successful. So people who look at it casually, superficially, would say there's a causative relationship. And the Talmud brings this up too, and it talks about one Jew asked another rabbi, and he asked him, I know that idolatry is not true, but I saw this guy who was crippled, who walked into a church, and then later on he walks out and he's completely upright. So the rabbi said to him that God gives diseases a certain term, and there's an onset for the disease, there's a duration, and then it expires at a certain point. And it just so happened that you happened to see a guy leaving the church at the same time that his disease was leaving his body. But don't think there's anything to it. So you see that people make causal relationships. And they, when the existence of those causes are not causes, they're just coincidences. So it's important. And the Talmud took that up. Okay, but nonetheless, Balak was under the impression that Bilam had this ability, and Bilam, you know, lied to people and let them think this because he was greedy and he knew he could make money out of this. And so Balak sent his messengers to ask to retrieve Bilam and bring him back, because Balak now saw the Jews were coming and they were big and they took over a number of kings already, and he was afraid that they were going to lick up all the produce of the land and be a real problem. So he felt if Bilam could curse the Jews, so then Balak and his Moabite nation would be able to have greater chances of success in a military victory over the Jews. So that's why he was asking for Bilam to come and curse the Jews. So Bilam is at his home. Balak's messengers arrive, and he says, wait here, I'll let you know if I can curse them. And he speaks to God at night. God comes to him and says that he can't go because the Jews are blessed. So he says, I can't go with you. So they return, and then Balak is disappointed, but he sends even more higher-ranking officers. They come back to Bilam the next time, and Bilam says to them, wait again. And so you see already that Bilam is bent on cursing the Jews, and because God already told them that they're blessed, but nonetheless, he tried again. So this time God says, if there's some sort of a gain, you can go with them, but not for the intent of cursing. So Bilam, and I believe it's one of the rabbis who said this, felt, well, you know, maybe God changed his mind. First time he said, I can't go, now he said, I can. So maybe the cursing of the Jews is something which changes also. So he went with them. And now this is where we pick up our story. So God was angry, and now we're reading from Numbers 22:21. So it's Numbers, Bamidbar 22, chapter 22, verse 21. So it says that Bilam got up in the morning, and you see he was eager, and he saddled his own donkey, and he went with the officers of Moab. And God was angry that he went, and he stood an angel in the way to turn him aside. And Bilam was riding on his donkey, and his two lads were with him. And the donkey saw the angel of God standing in the way, and his sword was outstretched in his hand. So the donkey turned aside from the path, and it went into the field. And Bilam hit the donkey in order to get it back onto the path. And then again, a second time, the angel of God stood in the narrows of the vineyards, in like a certain very narrow passageways where the rabbis say it was very thin, only like two people could pass at a time. So now he stood in this area. Again, this is evidently where the donkey has now found itself. There's a fence on both sides of the donkey now. So that was much more narrow than the first time. And again, the verse says that the donkey saw the angel of God, And it brushed up against the wall, and it crushed Bilam's leg against the wall. And Bilam continued to hit the donkey. And a third time, the angel of God again passed over, and it stood in a place that was very narrow. There was no place to turn right or left at this point. So now there was no way for the donkey to turn. So the donkey saw God's angel, and it collapsed under Bilam. And now Bilam's anger burned, and he hit the donkey, this time it says, with a stick. So the donkey, now it says that God opened up the mouth of the donkey, and it said to Bilam, "What have I done to you that you're hitting me these three times?" So Bilam said to the donkey, "Because you've mocked me. If there was a sword in my hand, I would kill you right now." And the donkey says back to Bilam, "Am I not the donkey that you rode upon from old times until today? Is it my way to act this way?" And then Bilam says no. Seems to be he's conceding a little bit. Now it says that God opened up Bilam's eyes, and he saw the angel of God standing in the path with his sword stretched out in its hand. And Bilam bowed down and he prostrated himself to his face. And the angel of God said, "Why have you hit your donkey these three times? I've come out against you to turn you aside because your way is against me." And the donkey saw and turned away these three times. Again, it repeats these three times. Ula natasa mipanai. Would it be that you would have turned aside? Because now, if it did not turn aside, then I would have killed you, and the donkey I would have let live. Okay, so Bilam says now, he ends off the story, and Bilam says to the angel, "I have sinned because I didn't know that you stood against me on the path, and now, if this is evil in your eyes, I will return." And the angel said to Bilam, "Go with the men, you can continue. However, the matter which I speak, that you should speak." So Bilam went with the officers. Okay, so that's the whole story that we're going to take up. Now, let's note. You tell me now, what are some of the questions that you have? What are the oddities? And let's also try to prioritize what is, most important and what's more than, a greater problem or more of a central issue and lesser. But that's also important in terms of being on track when you want to answer, you want to approach an area in the Torah, or any area. You always want to have a sense for what's the core issues that we're dealing with. And this way it keeps you in focus. So what would you say, the core questions and the peripheral? All right, so DM, court is writing, "If God allowed Bilam to go the second time, why did he then send the angel to block him?" He let him go if there was going to be, the rabbi say, if there was going to be some monetary gain, if it was something which was he really wanted to go. So as long as he doesn't sin, so then he's allowing him. It's basically a qualification of the first time. The first time God said not to go, don't curse. That's what he meant. Jim, you're asking, why does it mention Bilam's two young men? Maybe not core, but an oddity. Yes, Jim, that's a very good observation, and I'm going to take that up. And Shoshana, you're saying the sword of Finchas at the end of the Parsha. What's Bilam's real relationship was with certain characters that built this vision self-conscious battle? You're asking, what is Bilam's real relationship was with certain characters that built this vision? I'm not sure what you're saying, Shoshana, if you can clarify that. But let me just go back. Jim, like you said, yes, it mentions that there's two men that are with him. And then, what's interesting? It doesn't mention them at all afterwards. So what is it telling me this for? Interesting also is there's another story in the Torah when King Saul was, I think they were about to determine whether to battle the Philistines. And he was with two men. And Saul was so paranoid that he went to a witch to ask of the future. And the Torah treats it as if she actually brought up the dead Samuel, the dead prophet Samuel. And she describes him and so on, because she really knew it was Saul. So Saul was in such belief in the ability of the witch that he thought that he heard Samuel speak to him. But the Radak, one of the great rabbis on the Tanakh, Rabbi David Kimchi, so he says that the two men that were with King Saul, they didn't hear anything and they didn't see anything. I mean, even though the Torah describes it as if Samuel actually came out of the dead and through the powers of this woman, it's trying to show you how real Saul thought it was, this vision, this phantasm that he had. So in order to describe how real Saul felt this was, the Torah describes it as a real event. But Radak says, don't think that. The Torah has a method, and here it's describing a fantasy as real in order to teach you that very point, to show you just how real Saul thought this was, that Samuel was really coming out of the dead. But Radak is trying to show you that the two men on the side that didn't hear or see anything, they played an important role in the story. And that's what happened here too, I believe, is that God is telling you that, yes, it's true that Bilam did get up in the morning. He did have a real physical donkey. He had two real physical lads with him. But then you don't hear about the lads anymore because God now wants to show you a sharp contrast from where the story of the physical world starts and ends. Now, yeah, once you start talking about the two lads that are with him, you're talking about the physical world. But now that you don't hear a word about the two men anymore, the two young men, that's showing you where they go, because now the rest of the story is something which is taking place in Bilam's mind. It's giving you a marker to show you this is where the conflict in Bilam's mind starts. So it's not a discussion about a donkey talking and so on anymore. Okay. And Jim, you're asking another good question. Why doesn't Bilam show any astonishment at a talking donkey? All right? Did those with him see the angel or hear the donkey? Well, evidently, there's nobody else. There's only two characters, actually three characters. There's Bilam, there's the donkey, and then there's the angel of God. So you see that they were the two men. So this is to show you that these three characters in this story are taking place not on earth, they're taking place in Bilam's mind. And they're to illustrate something. And it's hidden for a reason. Okay, and Yisrael, good question. What was blocking Bilam from seeing the mouth? Okay, so that's what I'm going to get into. Why was the donkey able to see the angel and Bilam couldn't see it? Bilam's eyes were open. He could see the donkey. And you could ask also, a donkey knows what a malach. Why is a donkey even scared? A donkey sees a... Why should it... And how could it see it? How could a donkey see something and a man not see it? So exactly, what was blocking Bilam from seeing this angel? How come he couldn't see it until God opened his eyes? And what, his eyes were closed? I mean, they weren't closed. He's on a path. He's trying to hit the donkey to get on the path. So that means Bilam's eyes have to be open. Okay? Okay, let me just see. Do a brief sound check again, because Brian's saying he's having a problem with the sound. Is everybody still hear the sound all right? Just type audio okay. And we'll continue. Okay, Brian says the sound is back. Okay, so it's probably just a local issue. Okay, sound good for everybody else? And Shoshana, you can type your question in again now. Please, you know, clarify it so I can address your question too. Okay. So Shani, you're writing that again. But your question is the teaching and the relationship between Bilam and his donkey in reality and how it plays out in the vision. And why is an animal killed when it has been abused that way? I know this is a very uncomfortable question. Well, when you see the answer, you can see it's not really a physical donkey. So you won't have that issue. Okay, so it looks like we're fine with the audio. Okay, so we got a few questions so far. Let's see if we can line up more and see what's going on. So the donkey is seeing this angel. So we have to understand, what is this donkey? If we're saying it's a metaphor, so we have to give the definition of each one of these characters. And we see that Bilam, interesting also, is on a donkey. So Bilam's riding a donkey. An interesting thing also, I'll quote for you, is what the rabbi is saying on this. They say that, because when the donkey says back to Bilam, why did you hit me these three times? Or when the angel says to Bilam, these three times. So the rabbis make a comment, and they say that what did the angel show the donkey? That it turned aside from the path. So one view is that it showed the donkey the three forefathers. It showed him an image of Abraham, an image of Isaac, and an image of Jacob. That's what frightened the donkey somehow. But of course you'll ask, well, a donkey knows who these people are? Another view is that the angel showed the donkey the three holidays that the Jews celebrate. Passover, and Shavuos, and Sukkos. So what are they saying? And again, a donkey knows about the holidays? So you see, these type of statements of the rabbis are pushing you to say this is not a literal event. And again, certainly because Bilam just naturally talks back to a donkey that never spoke before, just casually, as if this is, you know, happens every day. All right. Ibn Ezra makes a statement, and he says, when the donkey spoke, it died. Not because of the getting hit by the stick. Just after it spoke, it died. What does he mean by that? What does that mean? Okay. But like Yisrael said, you know, the very powerful question is, how could the donkey see this angel and Bilam doesn't? Okay. And we see from the beginning that Bilam wanted to curse the Jews. Even after God said no the first time, the second set of officers come from Moab. And he's, again, Bilam inquires from God. So you see, he was bent on it. And he went and he kept on trying to curse them with later on, after the whole event, when he finally reaches the king, Balak, he's very bent on wanting to curse the Jews. So he had this anti-Semitism as well as Balak. All right. Let me see if you have any other observations or questions before we start making the steps to the answer. Let me wait and see if you have any questions or comments. And you're writing other idea on the significance of the three times. Yes, exactly. I'll explain that, what the three times going off the road. Because that's in correlation to the forefathers, the three forefathers, or the three holidays. Another thing also is you notice that each time they go off the path, it says that it got become narrow and more narrow. First time they go into the field, he gets them back on the path. This time it was narrow. There's a fence on both sides of the donkey, right below. And it has to, like, crush against the wall. And then also, that what's the significance of Bilam's leg getting crushed? Okay, and so, but you see, the second time was narrow, and the last time there was no way to turn left or right. So that's also an important part of the story. You see how this is all these details. You'll see how it comes together, and it'll give you appreciation for why you know the understanding and the information that God's trying to communicate. So what I believe is going on is as follows. Bilam had this great desire to curse the Jews. He knew that he couldn't, because God said that they're blessed. But that didn't get away, it didn't rid him of his animosity, his anti-Semitism towards the Jews. He still had a desire. So that's why he went. That's why God was angry, because he was bent on doing something which God said not to do. So he's on the way, and now all of a sudden we hear about the two men, but then we stop hearing about the two men. So what I want to say is that this point is to show this is where the visions or the conflict in Bilam's mind starts. That's why the two men are not there anymore. Because now we're not talking any further in the story about a physical event. So he's on this donkey that sees an angel of God. So what's the donkey and what's the angel of God? So if you think about it, when a person's in conflict, so what part of them can see reality and what part doesn't? Or when you have a certain strong desire. So that there's a part of you that just does not want to face a certain truth. So you can describe it as being blind to the truth, because you have a certain path, you have a certain passion about something, whether you're right or wrong. It's just some reason, it's a very strong desire, and everybody goes through this in life. Where at certain times in life, we have a very strong passion for something, and we make a decision, and we're you know, very passionate about it, and we don't think as clearly as we should to find out if it's a good act, if there's repercussions or not. So what happens is that you can describe it such an event as a person controlling their... Let's say it's a proper thing to do. Like here, the Jews, it was a proper thing to do not to curse them. But Bilam wanted to. So what he was doing was he was riding the donkey. Bilam here represents his instinctual drive to express his animosity towards the Jews. And riding the donkey means that he's trying to suppress. And that's why he keeps on hitting it. He's trying to suppress the sense of his conscience. His conscience is telling him this is wrong to do. He doesn't want to face it. And the conscience keeps on taking him off the side. So now, that's what it means. The donkey is going off the side of the road. The donkey sees reality. The donkey is his conscience. And the angel represents the reality. God's words, that they're blessed. So the conscience, Bilam's own conscience, is fighting with his instincts. That's what it means. He's on the donkey hitting it. The donkey keeps on going off the side. And Bilam has to keep on hitting it to get back on the path to go to the place where he can curse the Jews. All right? You see that? So that's where the donkey sees this angel. The donkey sees reality. Because the donkey is representing his own conscience. And that's what the conscience does. The conscience perceives information from the intellect. What's true, what's not. And it makes a moral judgment. But the instincts of a person do not perceive. It's like they have no eyes. All the instincts ever want to do is push forward towards a goal, a drive, to satisfy a lust, a passion. So that's why Bilam does not see the angel. So at this point in the story, Bilam is representing his own passions, his aggression. The donkey is representing his conscience, which keeps on turning away because the conscience sees reality, the conscience sees the angel. Now we see what the players are in the story. All right, let me just stop here and see if everything's clear at this point before I go further. Because then we'll have to interpret the events now based on this. All right, let me know if that's clear. then we'll go into the details. Alright, we should go further. Everybody up to speed? Okay. Alright, so now that we understand what was being represented over here. Alright, now we see why Bilaam, to answer Yisrael, your question, why was it that Bilaam could not see the Malach, couldn't see the angel? Because the instincts, which is what Bilaam represented here in this story, the instincts don't have the ability to perceive. All instincts do is they push constantly from the day you're born to the day you die to satisfy whatever urge you have. It's not unless a person trains his intellect and learns Torah and studies the sciences and starts seeing that this is much more gratifying than momentary physical pleasures, then a person's instincts start to subside a bit. So now let's understand. As he's going on the path, the donkey keeps on going off the path, meaning this conscience keeps on trying to stop him, and he keeps on trying to repress it. That's why the last time he hits it with a big stick, or a stick as opposed to something else. But you see that he had to use, as the conscious information comes to a person, as he starts to recognize that he's got a problem, and he may be making a mistake with something, he tries to suppress it even more. So that's why the Torah says the third time he hit it with a stick, to show that there was a larger force needed to suppress what the donkey, what his conscience was trying to reveal to him. He didn't want to deal with the reality. So he had to use a larger object as it progressed. What does it mean that the place where the donkey got to each time it became more narrow and narrow? So it means that there was less avoidance of the reality. Meaning in Bilaam's case, it could be other people that are different, but in Bilaam's case, something was happening that his conscience was starting to really wear on his instincts. And it was becoming more and more difficult until the donkey just collapses and doesn't move. So he can't make progress. He comes to like a standstill. But you see what happened the second time, the donkey, meaning when he's trying to avoid the reality, which is depicted as a donkey crushing up Bilaam's leg against the wall. What's the importance of the leg? See, a leg does what? A leg is what gives you it gives you locomotion, allows you to move in a certain path. The crushing of the leg means here that there was a slowdown in Bilaam's progress in going towards his goal because he was starting to sense a problem in his desire to curse the Jews. So that's what it means that his morality is was trying to wear on him, like as if his leg was crushed. It was slowing him down. And you see the same exact analogy is given when Jacob wrestled with the man. He was wrestling with a certain part of his personality. Because you see that it was only when Esav, his brother, started to come to him from the distance, it awoke something in Jacob's personality. And he explained, like Rabbi Chait said, He saw Esav was merely just a warrior. All he was an external self-image of a man. But when Jacob saw that at this point in history, he now sensed that he's got some of that in him too. And that's not a good thing, to try to just live up to a fabricated self-image. That's not your goal in life. Your goal is to be involved in truth and teaching, educating others, and kindness and generosity. Not to live up to a self-image. But when Jacob at this point saw Esav coming, it awoke in him, you know, I've got a little bit of that myself. So he started working on himself, as if he was wrestling a man. That's why the verse, the Torah verse there says that there was nobody there, he was left alone. Vayevekimo ish. It says, Vayevosa Yaakov levado, that Yaakov was left alone. But then he wrestled a man. How could you be left alone and wrestle a man? Because the man here is really part of his personality. And when he actually conquered it, and he overcame that part of his personality, it says that he was limping on his leg the next morning. Again, the leg is used to show that when you have a slowdown in energies going towards a certain objective, it could be described as having a leg problem. So you see, the Torah did it twice. So it's not a coincidence that in both cases, the leg was damaged. So I just want to show you that too. Okay, so now getting back to Bilam. So now, he finally gets to the point where the donkey collapses and it doesn't move. But let's just answer the other question about the three. What does it mean that the angel was showing the donkey the three forefathers, or he was showing him the three holidays? And why was that a problem? So now you can understand that where did the conflict, and really the donkey was Bilam, right? It's just Bilam's conscience the whole time. Bilam is wrestling with himself. There's no donkey. This is a conflict. So, but there's something that his morality, something that that Bilam's conscience saw that created the conflict. And that was the three forefathers. Because what does Bilam want to do? He wants to curse a nation who comes from three forefathers. But they're favored by God. And that was the source of the conflict. That's what it means that donkey turned aside three times. Meaning it was due to the three forefathers that caused Bilam's conscience to turn aside and cause this reluctance to continue on the path. Or you could say it was the nation that served, that celebrates the three holidays. Either way you go, it's showing that there's a relationship between God and the people. And Bilam can't curse the people without God. He knows that. He only lies to people and says that he can curse. But the truth is, that's what he said, Kavan Oli. He says to God, please come and help curse for me this nation. Okay? So, is that clear so far? Let me stop again and see if there's any questions or comments. Let me pause over here. Because these were like the main points. In terms of Bilam not seeing the angel, and what was the three things that were showing it. But now we should see clear that the conflict was coming. Good, thanks, Jim. So we can see clear that the conflict is coming from the fact that he needs God to curse the Jews, but God favors the Jews. That's where the whole conflict came from. The nation that has three forefathers, or the nation that celebrates the three holidays. That's why the three is significant. The connection in Israel to the three holidays the rabbis are trying to tie in the way the story goes, and since there's a turning aside three times, which really, in truth, is trying to show there's a progressive decrease in the energies when you're in conflict. That's what the story is showing you by the fact that it kept on conflicting with them a few times until it finally couldn't go any further. But the rabbis use that as a springboard. Oh, three times? And the Malach, the angel, says to the angel, why have you donkey these three times? Why did you turn aside? Right? So, let me just give you the exact words. Yeah, he says, the angel says, on what have you hit your donkey these three times? That means there were three specific events. And it could be that God wrote that in the story in order to give the rabbis the opportunity to explain and give some hints towards the Torah reader. So we don't know exactly why, but the fact that the rabbis are using that as a springboard to say that they're trying to show you that there's something about the conflict which emanated from the Jewish nation that is favored by God. How are they favored by God? Because they were founded by the three forefathers. Or they were the ones that celebrate God by the three holidays. Okay, Yisrael, let me know if this is clear. Okay, good. Thanks, Yisrael. Okay, so now we see a number of the elements, and now why there's such detail in a story like this, in the Torah story. Evidently, he wouldn't have been able to do it on his own. That's why God had to open up the mouth of the donkey, because he wouldn't have, listen, Bilam was too stubborn. even though the dumpy collapsed, he still would have done something. He would have got off the donkey and ran to Balak. So you see, that's why God opened up the mouth. He still gave an opportunity to Balaam. And that's why Balaam wasn't alerted. He wasn't alarmed that an animal talking to him. Because this is all taking place in a vision. Just like you have dreams of amazing things, you're not alarmed in your dream. Because it's a whole different mindset when you're in a dream. And Shoshana. So your earlier question was how the curses became the same blessings Hashem gave Abraham about us blessing the nations and so forth. Yeah, because they were true. When Balaam gave certain statements over here, they were accurate. So then it was through prophecy. And those, since they're accurate, they can become part of our prayers. Just because Balaam was a Russian doesn't mean that at certain points he didn't say accurate things. And you see, God says to Balaam, go back and tell Balak the word that I put in your mouth. So that means it is accurate truth. Okay? All right. So now, let's just see if we answered the main points that we asked. We asked about the leg. We understand that, to slow down an energy towards a certain path. We understand the three players, that really that Balaam, he couldn't see the Malach, the angel at the beginning, until God opened his eyes. And his eyes were open the whole time. It just means until he gave him insight. Right? It says the same thing by Adam and Eve. It says that their eyes were open and they knew they were naked. So it doesn't mean that their eyes were closed before that. It just means they had new insight, and they now understood that nudity was something they should be embarrassed about. Because prior to eating of the fruit in the Garden of Eden, there was no morality yet. And there was no sense of good or bad. So they, even though they were both naked, it says that in the verse, but they weren't embarrassed. To show you that God did not yet deem it necessary to give human beings a sense of morality. The most important area of knowledge is truths and false, and you know, and falsehood. So that's why Adam was able to name the animals, and he was able to be involved in that. But since there was still a part of a personality that was unsatisfied, so therefore, he created the woman, and then there was a sin, and now to help them not sin so quickly next time, he created morality, the conscience, the thing which Balaam is actually in conflict with here. You see, opening the eyes doesn't mean physically, the eyelids opening. It means he gave insight. Okay, now we understand the three times. We understand the source of the conflict came from that he's trying to curse the people through God, but God favors these people, either because of the three forefathers, or God favors them because they celebrate the three holidays. Either way, it's teaching you the same idea. So now, we can ask another main question, because this addresses the elements of the story. And again, I just want to repeat again, you see, there's no mention of the three young men, like, what was it said? Jim had mentioned earlier. Why does it talk about the three young men, and then what's the significance? Exactly, and that was a very good observation, Jim, because that is how God uses the story to indicate to us this is where the physical story ends, and now where the vision begins. Okay? So you get clues. God constructs a story. But the thing to come away with is look at all of the great detail, and it's all pointing to something. There's another detail that we didn't take up yet. What does this thing about the sword outstretched in the hand of the angel? What would you say about that? Now that you understand the story, how would you explain an outstretched sword? And again, that's in the hand of the angel. So plug it into the story and see if you can determine now. Now that we understand what the angel is, what's the concept of a sword? Okay, so you're saying it's a warning, okay. Good, I mean, you're saying it's something which is like a threat. Good, see if you can plug it into the characters in the story now. And also, just I wanted to mention, we said that the Ibn Ezra says that when the donkey spoke, it died. So what that means is that once the conscience gives you information and it finally becomes conscious, it becomes aware, you become aware of the content, now it did its purpose. Meaning your conscience, once it delivers information to you and now you're aware of it, so now you could say it died, meaning it did its job. It ceases to function. So that's what it means. That's what Ibn Ezra means, I believe, that the donkey died after it spoke. So I believe the sword means, what is perceiving the sword? What's perceiving the sword is the conscience. So the conscience has, not only does it have trying to awaken the intellect, okay, but the way it works is that the conscience doesn't only perceive the content, but it can also perceive a degree of severity. How severe is something? Meaning our abilities to judge and to make a moral decision. We know that littering is not as bad as murder. So that we can attach a level of severity to something. And I believe that's what the sword means here, is that the donkey, which represents Bilam's conscience, it's his sense of what's right and wrong, is now sensing that there's something very, very wrong, meaning a sword. All right, it wasn't, you know, what would you say, a slingshot being aimed at him, but a sword was being pointed. So now that's to show that the conscience has the ability to detect the level of severity of something wrong, not only to determine and distinguish right from wrong, but once I know something's wrong, how wrong is it? How severe is it? And Shoshana, you're writing, okay, so the level of severity that ends this parsha is Pinchas and a sword also. Well, there he just used the sword in order to kill the ones that were, mocking Moses and God's laws. So we don't have to say that the sword in the case of Pinchas has the same significance. Yes, a sword is used for killing. That's what he used it. That was a practical. But what I'm mentioning over here is that in the vision, you have to explain the details. And I'm just showing you that there's another detail here which we can glean another, nice idea from. That the conscience doesn't just distinguish right and wrong, but it also can attach a level of severity to something. Okay. Now let's take more of a broad understanding here, broad question. What's the need? I mean, we have very few cases in the Torah where you have a metaphor. And like we said at the beginning, you could only... A has a question before we go further. Let me answer. I now understand your analysis here, but back to my original question of how do we understand the rest of the Torah? Abraham and the three guests, literal or not? And the Shoshana asked, if it is not meant to be taken literal, how do we reconcile Sarah hearing the messenger telling Abraham she'll be pregnant? Okay, so Maimonides says here that the story of Bilam, this whole story is a vision, because he says as follows. Anytime you have an angel in the story, you know from beginning to end that it's something which is not physical. It's a vision of some sort. Why? Because angel is not a physical being. And that's why I got into a whole thing before about the angel of God moved from in front of the Jews to the back, then the pillar of God moved. Meaning, it's the angel, the non-physical law, which controlled the cloud. So angels are in visions. They're not on earth. The only thing with intelligence on earth is man. And that's a very important notion, because otherwise people start believing in powers and intelligences, and things that can foresee the future, or whatever. There are other things. There's devils. There's spirits. There's ghosts. So to put a lid on it, that's what this principle really does. When you say that angels only exist in the metaphysical world, meaning in a different plane altogether, has nothing to do with the earth. So whenever you have a story about an angel in the Chumash, you know that it's not taking place on earth. So then we have to interpret the story about the three men that came to Abraham too, because the rabbis say clearly afterwards that they're angels. And Maimonides says that story too. That was a vision. So that means the three men coming to Abraham was a vision of some sort too. So therefore, and it's not impossible that Sarah can be part of that vision. So when you're asking, it's a good question you're asking. If it's a vision, so how could Sarah know about what's going on? Either she heard, she's part of the vision, or this is just Abraham's own vision. And part of the vision is God is showing Abraham that Sarah has some disbelief, that she heard and she didn't believe that she was going to have a child. So part of the vision was not just to announce to Sarah that she was going to have a child, but that God also informed Abraham in that very vision that Sarah had a certain sense of disbelief. So how does God inform Abraham of Sarah's disbelief? He paints a picture in the vision of Sarah laughing. Okay, so that gets you out of the problem. Okay, A, you didn't give your first name, so I'm just addressing you as you wrote. I hope that's clear. So going to Maimonides again, the whole story of the three men that came to visit Abraham was a vision. And if you look at the verses, that's how Maimonides shows. It says that God appeared to Abraham in the plains of Mamre, and it was in the heat of the day, and then it says three men came. Okay, you're welcome, A. So what Maimonides says is as follows. He says, yeah, the story starts out telling you that God was about to appear to Abraham. So how does God appear? He appeared in a vision of three men. I mean, that was the prophecy they gave. So Maimonides says the first verse in the Parsha says that God was going to appear to Abraham, or he did appear. And then the next verses will tell you, how did that appearance take place? Oh, it was the form of three men. And now you have to analyze that story based on that. And it says one of these men was really a force of nature that was going to heal Abraham from the circumcision. Another one was going to announce the birth of Sarah. And the third was going to overturn Sodom and Gomorrah. And there again, the rabbis say, why three angels? Because one angel doesn't do more than one mission. Again, each angel means it has a certain sphere of control over certain natural laws, and that's it. Okay. But again, there's very few cases where you talk about metaphors in the Torah. So we have to understand, so why in this case wasn't it possible to talk about Bilaam and the whole conflict literally? Why couldn't just God write? Bilaam wanted to curse the Jews. God didn't want it. Bilaam hated the Jews. And then his unconscious started having a battle with him, and he kept on trying to suppress his unconscious. And he started using a stronger force. As you can see, it would be very hard for many people, especially younger people or people that are ignorant of the psyche, to really grab onto that and say, what? There's something inside of us. There's something called a conscience. There's something called id and ego and so on. As a matter of fact, when Freud was about to give a lecture, so he writes in one of his books that he says that, if I was, I'm just paraphrasing, but he says that he was apologizing for saying, it's not like I'm talking about an anatomy here and I could point to a kidney or a lung and then there'll be concrete items and, there's a concrete anatomy that I can point to and educate you. But he says, no, I'm talking about the psyche and it's abstract. So it may be subject to more ridicule. So he was prefacing his lecture that day to his students on saying that I understand you're going to have a difficulty because I'm going to be teaching you about things that I can't point to with my finger. So you see, even Freud had the same recognition that talking about elements of the psyche, the conscience, the unconscious, morality, and how they work and the interaction. So this is something which is much more abstract, and many people can't get it. So therefore, it makes sense to me why God wrote this story in a cryptic fashion. What it does is it will conceal the ideas from people who are not ready yet, and they won't come to dismiss it, because let's say you wrote it out clearly, as in literal terms, that there's certain parts to the psyche. Well, people might, dismiss it and reject the Torah, and then that would close the door to to ever coming back to this, or worse, it would close the door to them ever appreciating Torah in the future. So a very wise strategy would be to talk about the ideas. So this way, they can be communicated. They're not hidden from the world, but they're said in a way that are disguised. So only the intelligent people can unravel it, and then they can communicate it, and then they can really see the brilliance. And like we did today, we can see the details. And then you come away from, wow, there's a lot of depth to the Torah. But if somebody doesn't recognize it, so there's no harm done. So that's what the rabbis say. And you have in the Talmud too, the rabbis do the same thing. They talk in allegory and metaphor. And they engage this very design in order to make sure that the communication is there. We have it. It's being passed down from generation to generation. But those who are not on the level won't be damaged by it. And they'll just think, I don't understand it. They'll walk away from it. Okay. All right, so let me just read some of your notes on screen. Okay, welcome, Shoshana. And Jim, you're writing, will people not be tempted to reject the Torah when it tells them that a donkey spoke? Yeah, but you have to have a compromise. The communication has to be made. The communication has to be made. And the truth is, there could be a certain appeal to a story like that to a young child. So when you're young and you hear something like that, but hopefully the child will ask and inquire because he never saw a talking donkey. But a lot of times the way the rabbis write, they write in a way to catch your ear. They say something very astounding. So there's a lot of good reasoning behind a story of this type. All right? There is a risk, but there's other risks if you don't write the story at all. And Yoni, you're writing, so in other words, if we have a loving conscience, we should be able to understand. No, that doesn't mean that a person is intelligently sharp enough to look at a story like this and really get it on his own. It could take a lot of years, and I'm sure it does for most people. I'm sure even many adults dismiss these stories because they've never really sharpened their minds. They may have, become very, adept at business, but when it comes to Torah, if they have not studied on a regular basis, so then they still carry over a view of a Torah that's infantile, and they don't ever look at it. So a loving conscience is not what you need, right? What you need is to have, tutelage under, wise rabbis that can really give you the information. And, train you how to think. And that's why Talmud is so important. But I just wanted to end on this point that you see that certain areas were disguised. And just like this area is talking about the psyche, the person, how they think, things which are more hidden to your typical person. So also by the case of Jacob wrestling with the angel, he was wrestling with a part of his personality too. So you see another case. And it would be nice if we could understand the case of Abraham and the three angels too. That would be, to understand what's going on over there, that might be a nice thing to understand now also, since we're talking about how do we understand the visions. All right, it's clear to everybody? And the truth is also, the other benefit is that these stories sharpen your mind by having to analyze and look at the detail and dig for the answers. Okay. All right, so I think that's it. That'll wrap it up. I hope you enjoyed. We'll continue. God willing, we'll try to do this on a weekly basis. Hope this time works for everybody. And if you're not on the email list, so just subscribe. You can send an email to subscribe@masora.org, and this way you'll get notifications by email of when the next class is. And if you miss a class, I make sure to put the recording, because I record this at the same time, so I'll put it on the audio page. This way you can hear a class in case you couldn't attend. Okay, Yisrael, Carolyn, Shoshana, Brian, Jim, DM, Yoni, I'm glad you joined. Good to see you all again, and hope we continue. Have a great day, a meaningful fast today, everybody.